absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tverkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente interkulturell.
Absolutely intercultural.
Welcome to episode number 13 of Absolutely Intercultural, the podcast where we explore anything and everything intercultural. Well, curious things are happening around us and around our show, and we seem to become rather famous, or maybe infamous. I'm not quite sure about that. Well, we'll find out later. We had a rather serious research article of no less than 11 pages written about our first show by Fred Dervin from the Department of French Studies at the University of Turku in Finland. It's really a pity he chose the first show to write about, as we were learning things the hard way back then, and his sociolinguistic approach might have been a little more appropriate for a later episode. But if you like complicated linguistic texts, this might be exactly what you want to read. So check it out. You'll find the link in our show notes. And Paul Braddock has developed a lesson plan, also for our first show. This is absolutely amazing. He has taken our show, transcribed it, and developed several exercises, including listening comprehension and also some games. Paul, thanks very much indeed. We feel really honored, and we like the idea very much, so please feel free to do the same for other episodes as well. You can, of course, find more information and all the links on our blog at www.absolutelyintercultural.com.
And another amazing thing has happened. Two good friends of us have produced a show. Thomas and Theo both work for the Institute InterResearch in Fulda, and Thomas recently went to the NAFSA conference in Canada, where he recorded several absolutely fantastic interviews. You're going to hear Thomas and Theo in a minute, but first we really need to say hello to all the new friends on our Flapper map. We would like to say a special hello to
Jean-Luc from Mali,
Matt from Australia,
Christina from Lithuania,
Butaina from Kuwait,
John from Canada,
Susan from the USA,
Ulla from Sweden,
and Artem from Russia.
Welcome to our intercultural family, and please excuse if we've butchered your names. I think we should all meet in one place someday for a conference or a get-together for this podcast, and then you can do the same with our names. The Frapper map alone is really worth a visit of our blog, and there is still a lot of room for all of you, so please go to www.absolutely-intercultural.com and put yourself on the map. It does not take longer than 3 minutes, I promise you. If you have the time and the energy, please include a picture of yourself. This makes the map so much more personal, I think, when I look at the map. By the way, Thomas and I and some of our project partners from Sweden and Spain are going to the EAIE conference in Basel, Switzerland this week. EAIE stands for European Association for International Education. We are going to give a roundtable discussion, in fact, about this podcast, as an intercultural preparation for students when they go abroad. So if you're going to be there, then why don't you join our roundtable session on intercultural preparation of internships abroad at the EAIE on the 15th of September. We are really looking forward to meeting you, so please don't hesitate to contact us, also by writing a message to contact@absolutely-intercultural.com. But now let's hear what Thomas and Theo have prepared for us.
Hi, I'm Thomas.
And I'm Theo.
And we are from Fulda,
a town in the middle of Germany. And we are really proud to present you this show of the podcast,
Absolutely Intercultural.
Thomas, I heard you've been in Canada, Montreal, at the international conference called NAFSA. What is this about?
Yes, you're right. I'm still excited about my trip to Canada and NAFSA, the absolutely world largest yearly event for international educators. This year, more than 7,000 people from universities, exchange organizations, and companies worldwide headed to Montreal, the location of NAFSA 2006. I would like to share with you some intercultural news and insights I collected at the conference. I will speak to Bill Nolting, the head of the NAFSA Viva Committee. And you won't believe what you hear about his intercultural work experience in Germany many years ago. Can you imagine international university with 700 students on board of a cruise liner crossing different continents? Curious? Then listen to Dr. Joseph Olander, the president of the scholarship. Have you ever heard about re-entry shock? Alice Wu, an intercultural consultant, explains to us what you should think about when you come back home from your stay abroad. And
we are hearing music from Derek K. Miller from Burnaby, British Columbia. Furthermore, we will feature the podcast for Word Lovers, Word Dictionary by Charles Hodgson from Ottawa, the capital of Canada. Absolutely worth to hear. Well, Thomas, before you start, what about yourself? You've been in Montreal just for this podcast session?
Well, right. I presented at the conference the International Internship Program, Hessen Global, www.hessen-global.de, together with my colleague Katja. And yes, we are just about to start the pilot run of this intercultural program this summer. But international internships have been a big topic at the conference. There are growing numbers of students doing practical trainings abroad every year. And of course, political affairs have been high on the agenda of the conference, especially US immigrant regulations and how international educators can try to stop the Bush administration to destroy international practical exchange by new visa regulations. We should all be aware of actions of our governments concerning this issue, because immigrant issues, visa issues really can hinder our international exchange. The NAFSA Viva Committee is a great platform to meet colleagues and exchange experience concerning the area of practical trainings and internships abroad.
I'm Bill Nolting. I work at the University of Michigan International Center, where I have a very interesting job, namely to help students find ways to go overseas to study abroad or to work abroad or to have an internship or volunteer abroad or do something interesting after they graduate.
He is the head of the NAFSA Education Abroad Subcommittee on Work, Internship and Volunteering Abroad. And let's hear how he experienced as a student himself what it's like to work in Germany.
Well, that is interesting. I went to study at the University of Freiburg. I did not go on a study abroad program. I just went by myself, and I realized that I hardly knew any German. So I spent that year trying to learn German. And at the end of the time, a friend of mine who was British and who was on an exchange program had been working at a furniture mover, a Möbelschieber. And he offered me his job, and I really had never thought of working, I have to tell you. So he twisted my arm, he persuaded me, and I went to take his job the next day. And on the first day of the job, I was at one point lifting furniture on a rope, with a rope and pulley, and suddenly the worker said, "Up!" And so I pulled it up. And then they screamed at me, they said, "Was machst du? Bist du verrückt? Are you crazy? You know, we said pull it up. We said pull it down," and they pointed downwards. And I said, "Oh, I see," because in academic German you would say ablassen. So you'd say it very formally and easily, and just hearing up, it registered as lifted up. So that was my shock treatment in work abroad. And you know, I found that I had to use the language much more actively to be very engaged. I couldn't just sit there like I might in a classroom.
Absolutely true. That's real life you cannot find at a university or in books.
Something which sounded absolutely unreal was a scholarship, an international university on a cruise liner. But listen to the captain.
Yes, my name is Dr. Joseph David Olander. I'm headquartered in Baltimore, Maryland, in the United States. I have the honor of being president of the scholarship. I've been lucky throughout my career to have been president of 5 American universities and 2 private universities in mainland China. And when I left my Chinese presidency in the year 2004, I was interested in establishing a very different, very transnational higher education institution with a venue on board a cruise liner. And therefore, the idea was born that way. And we will be recruiting students from around the world to be students on board the ship at the university levels of graduate and postgraduate. And we'll be recruiting faculty from around the world. So there will be a multicultural learning community. And our, besides the technical courses they'll be taking as part of their educational preparation, we're going to emphasize into intercultural communication and intercultural leadership skills.
Can you give us 3 good reasons why students should embark on this international and intercultural adventure?
Well, first of all, it will enhance their personal fulfillment of life. I am a member of the Science Fiction Writers of America. So when I hear people use words like intercultural, international, and global, I think they're decidedly parochial terms. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in intergalactic, interspatial programs, but that will have to wait until later. Sometimes in science fiction, when human beings encounter an alien being, their first reaction is to be fearful of strangeness. And what the scholarship will do is make people very comfortable and competent with what I call strangeness. Mm-hmm. Meeting and living and actively learning with people whose ideas are different from yours, whose language is different from yours, whose religious preference, whose culture are different from yours, and whose race is different from yours. And that will be very, very much to the advantage of one's personal fulfillment. Secondly, every program we have on board the ship will enhance the students' degree program at their home university. There is no subject that cannot be more enhanced by having a cross-cultural communication experience. And thirdly, we're learning from multinational corporate human resources officers that multinational corporations are looking for college graduates who have intercultural competent skills. It's no longer satisfactory for a multinational corporation to hire a person with one other language skill and a familiarity with one culture. The emphasis for these human resource officers is to have people who are, to use my language, comfortable and confident with strangeness, because their companies are all over the world, and to have people who know how to deal with the intercultural communication challenges is very much in the best interest of the corporation.
Exactly. Intercultural competence is becoming more and more important as the world is getting smaller and smaller. In a book I read the other day, the author even says that the world is becoming flat again, metaphorically speaking, that is, because of all the new technologies which enable people to communicate and to work together in ways that have formerly not existed. Well, I wonder how the passengers of the scholarship feel when they return from their journey. I think that such an outstanding experience is changing our way of thinking and maybe even our way of life. Will they experience a re-entry shock when they return to their home countries? Thomas has interviewed Alice Wu. So let's hear what she has to say about the phenomenon of re-entry shock.
I'm an intercultural trainer, and I do programs usually at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. I do training for staff and students about different topics relating to intercultural communication and training, such as culture shock, re-entry shock, working in intercultural groups, other related topics. Yes, I do re-entry programs for study abroad students at Cornell, and very often people will think that when they go to another country that, of course, they're going to have to adjust to the culture, and it's going to take a little time, and it might be a little difficult, but usually when people go home, they never think that they'll have to readjust to their home, and they're usually very surprised when they have some cultural adjustment on that end, too, and usually they might have trouble fitting in again with their family and friends, or they may have missed current events that they don't know about, or their friends may have sort of different interests or may not seem interested in hearing about their study abroad experience. So it's sometimes very hard for them to explain their experience in a way that they feel that other people can understand. And so a lot of times people will get depressed, or they'll change their majors, or they'll just feel like they need to leave again. There are a lot of things that happen when people have reentry shock. So when we do these workshops, it gives the students a chance to talk about how they feel and to see that other people also feel that way and see that it's a normal phenomenon also. And I think it really helps them.
Can you give an example of such re-entry shocks for our listeners?
Yes, I meet a lot of people with re-entry shock, both in these workshops and just with my friends. A lot of people who are graduate students who go to a program for a couple of years, and then when they come back, they just have a lot of cultural differences. One of my friends was studying communications, and he was this very outgoing and friendly guy from New York, and he was Jewish and very funny and very talkative, and he went to Japan for a couple of years, and when he came back, he didn't know how much to look at people or talk to people, and when he walked around the streets, he avoided eye contact, and his body language was much more like a Japanese person at that time, and he didn't know how much to talk, and he really didn't talk very much. He was having sort of trouble readjusting to how much he should talk, when he should talk, when he should look at people, how much he should look at people, and he really didn't look at people. And after I talked to him a little bit about reentry shock, he, for one thing, seemed very relieved, and he wrote a little story for me about his experiences coming back. But he also eventually became much more, I think, his usual self, which was very outgoing, very funny. It just took some time for him to first realize what was happening, and then to sort of, once he knew that, it just helped him to become sort of his own self again. So that was really nice.
Oh, yes. People often invest a lot of energy in the preparation of a stay abroad. But it happens very easily that you overlook challenges of reintegrating in your own culture, which might look not be completely your own anymore. If you have experienced something like a re-entry shock, we want to know about it. Send us your comments. It's just a click away at www.absolutely-intercultural.com.
Before saying ciao, let's join an absolutely recommendable podcast by Charles from Ottawa, Canada.
Pod Dictionary is a podcast for word lovers. Hear how Ernest Hemingway brought this Italian word into the English language.
This is Charles Hodson with Pod Dictionary, the podcast for word lovers. The dictionary word for today is ciao. In the olden days, when people wrote to each other on pieces of paper, they'd often sign off with sincerely or yours truly. These formalities above the signature have a name, the subscription, which makes sense because they're sub or below the script or writing. Another name for them is more formal, and it's called the eschatocall, from the Greek eschatos, meaning last or furthest, and with the same ending as protocol, since such formal sign-offs are the closing protocol of the letter. I'm sure you've seen or heard sign-offs that go further into the realm of, I remain your humble servant. These days, they may be used jokingly, but the idea behind them runs along the same lines as the greeting ciao. The word is from Italian and actually means servant or slave. English speakers use it, as do Italians, not to mean slave, but to mean hello or goodbye, something along the lines of hey. Now the word ciao is casual, but its meaning, slave, harkens back to I am your slave, and the same sense of respect a person signing off with your humble servant tried to convey. It was Ernest Hemingway who brought the word into English. He was a man's man, a hunting, fishing type of guy. He tried to fight in the First World War, but they rejected him based on his eyesight, so he joined an ambulance unit, and he was sent to fight in Italy. He'd only been there a week when his legs got nearly shot off, and he became a passenger in the ambulance. Like so many other war veterans, he came home after the war but had a hard time settling, and he eventually joined a group of artistes in Paris. With a couple of books under his belt, he wrote A Farewell to Arms in 1929, a love story set in Italy during the war. This was the book that made him as a writer, and also the book that brought ciao into English. It's pretty certain that he learned the word during his spell in Italy. Hemingway loved hunting, as I said, and it was during a big game expedition in Africa that he was killed in 1954 in an aircraft crash. He was particularly lucky to have survived this death, however, and he was especially pleased that the newspaper obituaries were so glowingly positive about him. The love story in Farewell to Arms doesn't end happily, and neither did old Ernest. In 1961, he shot himself. I'm Charles Hodson, and that's Pod Dictionary for today. Ciao.
Wow, Thomas and Theo, thank you very much for the great work. As I said before, you can meet Thomas and me at the EAIE conference in Basel from the 12th to the 15th of September. Well, we are talking about culture all the time, but what is culture really? You probably know the common metaphors like culture is like an iceberg or like an onion and so forth. You may have listened to our round table discussions with Fernando about culture as the software of the mind. However, there are different and maybe even more creative ways of explaining what culture really is. So let's listen to the ideas of Rhiannon and Victor, two students from Canada and from the USA who took part in a summer school organized by the Institute Inter Research.
Well, it started off as a tapestry, but we worked between two ideas, one of a tapestry or a mosaic, and how they all have pieces and elements that can be added or exchanged, removed, tinkered with, and how each person individually creates their own mosaic, and this represents their culture. And so you can have anything from your military history to even your leisure sports. You have celebrations, your ethics, your morals. All of this can actually be woven into the tapestry.
The most interesting thing about this mosaic is that it can include an infinite number of colors or patterns. But what you can see is when two colors might clash and form a boundary, and it can show, you know, the same thing of two cultures clashing and shows their instability. So, but these colors and these patterns can be changed over time to show culture's evolution.
And there are also some other elements that you can see. However, not only the transformations over time, but also the fact that you can rearrange these pieces of the mosaic to reinterpret your own culture or others' culture. And also it can show the deterioration if there's maybe too much movement or you've transported it, cracks, chips can actually develop, and that shows you how parts of maybe your own culture is eroding because it's been transported into another area.
Okay, it's time to come to an end. Please go to our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com and let us know what you think about our show. You can of course also send us an audio feedback and put your pin on our Flapper map so that we all can see where you are. The next show is coming to you from Denmark on the 22nd of September. Until then, stay tuned!
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.